Whether you drive a car, need a car, or just occasionally bum a ride with friends, you've come to the right place.
Join the editors of Consumer Guide Automotive as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Here's your host, Tom Appel.
All right, I am Tom Appel, and this is episode 143 of the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. When you get a chance, check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, check out our 2022 Best Buy picks. This list is an excellent starting place if you are shopping for a new car or a truck. You will also want to check out our blog for complete reviews of all the vehicles we're driving here at Consumer Guide and a bunch of other fun stuff. And this is important, you can catch up on back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage. All right, let's see who's online with us today. She is the managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, and her freelance work is all over the internet. Hello, Jill Simonello.
Hello, Tom Appel.
All over the internet. What does that mean?
It means like everywhere.
Yeah, a lot of stuff?
A lot of stuff. Well, so in addition to being the managing editor for Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, I do freelance. So in Chicago, you can find my reviews on drivechicago.com. I also work for Girls Guide to Cars, which was just picked up by MSN, I noticed today. So you'll be seeing me even more all over the internet. And then Capital One, their automotive section, I do a lot of freelance work for them. So all over the internet.
All over the internet. Sounds good. Jill, you just sent me an email moments ago.
I know. Yeah, a little bit of a gloat.
I had a perfectly crafted show, and then you showed up with this thing that I have to shoehorn into the program.
Shoehorn.
Wedge.
Got it. Yeah. I like wedge.
But you noted that if we go back to the Car Stuff Podcast Deadpool.
Yes.
You have now racked up one more correct prognostication. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I noticed today that the Nissan Maxima is going to be going away after the 2023 model year.
Yep, that was a weird car always. And that car became sort of redundant in the Nissan line when they started putting a V6 in the Altima, because the Maxima was always sort of the premium, not quite premium car, sedan in that lineup. I owned a Maxima way back in 1999. Great car. But it's had a weird place. It's sort of not really an Avalon kind of thing, where it was a premium, sort of not premium sedan. And they had a hard time selling that for a long time. Not surprised that's going away. So you have, so far, selected two vehicles, the Hyundai Accent and the Nissan Maxima.
Yes.
I had the Nissan Accent and the Nissan Titan. A lot of Nissans. I'm sorry, Hyundai Accent and Nissan Titan. Damon just has the one, which is also the Maxima.
Yep.
Right.
So, well, interesting stuff. We'll have to redo our Deadpool coming up.
And speaking of things that need to be redone... Okay. How's that for a segue?
I'll take that as a transition.
All right. As part of the Democrats' Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, a thing which has been bouncing around Congress for a while, there was an extension of the EV tax credit. And for people who don't know, the EV tax credit was a $7,500 tax credit, which would come off of your taxes, as it sounds, if you purchased a qualifying electric vehicle. The problem with it was there was a cap at 200,000 vehicles per manufacturer. And Tesla, which only sells electric vehicles, burned through their cap very quickly. General Motors next, and Toyota has just burned through it. And we're going to see Ford burn through it very soon, or maybe they just have, something like that.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. That leaves certain manufacturers at a distinct disadvantage. Mm-hmm. And Democrats have been anxious. They have been keen to extend this so that they can maintain the public interest in electric vehicles and make them more affordable. But things got sticky in Congress, and it looked like it wasn't going to get passed. Yeah.
A last-minute deal
between Chuck Schumer and longtime Democratic holdout Joe Manchin put together a deal to extend the EV tax credit, which sounds like a good thing, right?
In theory.
Yeah. Jill, go ahead. Just tell me why it's not a good thing.
Because because this is so confusing. We both looked at a couple of different articles on this tax credit, and I'm still trying to figure out what they're saying. I mean, the gist is they want to extend the credit for all automakers, but there's a cap on the price of the vehicle that you could buy that would qualify for the credit, and it also depends upon the amount of parts built in the United States. So they're trying to limit foreign built products, and that includes the battery and how the vehicle is sourced. And so there's that going on, and then they've also put in an income cap. I think it was like $150,000 for an individual and then $300,000 for a family. So they've got like, oh yeah, we want to extend this tax credit, but, and then it's like, but you can't spend more than $55,000 on it. You can't, you know, which would disqualify Rivian from pretty much any tax credits. And so, I mean, I don't know what they're trying to do with this bill. I'm confused.
Well, I understand it, and I guess, but one of the things that Manchin had not wanted to do was to help rich people buy cars. So I'm okay with the income caps because that $150,000 for an individual or $300,000 for a family, that includes, that leaves a lot of people under the cap. So that's not really a problem for me.
Yep.
I think most people would still be able to qualify. But the problem is with electric vehicles now, $80,000 for a truck or crossover, that excludes most of the Ford F-150 Lightnings.
Yeah. Actually.
And if I understand this correctly, and you correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is on the transaction price of the vehicle. So if you load it up with options, mm-hmm. you may cross that line.
Yeah, because it says like the upper limit for trucks and SUVs is now set to $80,000 while all other vehicles are set at $55,000. But right. But yeah, so if you like, so, you know, we've been talking a lot about the Ford F-150 Lightning at Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk and how the base price of that truck, you know, ostensibly is like $40,000. That's for the base work truck with the standard range battery. But one, they're all sold out and you can't buy one. And two, like the next leap up, so you can't buy a work truck with the extended range battery. That's for fleets only. So if you want to leap up, you're going to spend an extra $20,000 and that puts you at $60,000. And then if you want any additional options on it, yeah, you're going to be over the $80,000 or $75,000 like really quickly.
Well, the weird part about that is, right, you move up to an XLT, correct?
Yep.
And an XLT with the extended range battery gets you dangerously close to 80 grand, right?
Yeah.
And if you put any options on it, and I suspect this does not include tax, but I think if you're paying anything over transaction too, because the dealer wants more money, it's going to be very difficult to get your long range F-150 under this cap.
That is 100% correct. So it just, to me, it's just fascinating. Like trucks are going to be the hardest buy, I think, or the hardest sell for truck guys. And I why would you do that? Why would you do that?
I don't know. The price cap on the vehicle may be somewhat unnecessary if you have a limit on the income of the household.
Right.
To my mind. Like, I don't know why you need to cap the cost in two different places, but we should talk just a little bit about the most confusing part of this, and that's the battery sourcing part, right? It sounds like, if I'm reading this right, and correct me if I read any of this wrong, the battery has to be manufactured in the U.S., correct?
Yeah, that's how I read it as well.
And then it gets weirder. Not only does the battery have to be manufactured in the U.S., but the components for the battery, which are primarily the chemicals used for the battery, need to be sourced locally or sourced from foreign entities that we do not consider adversarial,
or that we have a trade agreement with. Yeah,
so that's confusing too. And first of all, this is going to be relatively difficult to track. I think it's going to be difficult for consumers to know when and when not the tax credit applies, but it's not going to apply to very many vehicles.
Yeah. So, I mean, your Bolt EVs, your Bolt EUV, you know, your base level, small, compact EVs, it'll apply to. But, like, I just drove the BMW i4. That wouldn't qualify. You know, the new BMW iX, that wouldn't qualify. And BMW currently still has a lot of tax credits left. So And the interesting thing is there are a lot of people who, you know, middle class people who are under the salary cap who buy these more expensive vehicles. They just extend the loan term probably for longer than maybe they should. But there are a lot of people that buy vehicles that they, you know, are more up level. So I don't know. I find this very confusing and interesting. And again, correct me if I'm wrong. I believe it's already passed the House. And so now they're just looking to push it through the Senate.
Yeah, we're waiting for a Senate vote on this. And I guess there were some last ditch efforts by Toyota and other manufacturers to try to get these things tweaked, because right now they're confusing and mostly just exclusive. There are not a lot of vehicles here that qualify. I don't know, for example, and I can't find out anywhere, if the Cadillac Lyriq, which is brand new, which would come in under the 80 grand price cap, qualifies, because I don't know where the battery contents for that are sourced.
Right.
Even though the batteries are manufactured here, those are actually manufactured in Spring Hill, Tennessee. So that sounds like a good old American vehicle to me, right? A Cadillac with parts from Tennessee. But I don't know that the lithium and the cobalt in that are sourced domestically, and not much of that stuff is sourced domestically yet.
Yeah. No, so I'm like looking at the Car and Driver article, and there's when they talk about changes for manufacturers, it says the bills require automakers to use critical minerals for their batteries that were extracted and processed in North America, or a country the U.S. has a trade agreement with. Okay, so we've got that. The bill requires qualifying clean vehicles to use a minimum amount of such minerals, starting at 40% for vehicles put into service before January 2024, then going up by 10% a year until it reaches 80% for vehicles placed into service after December 31st, 2026. So it doesn't look like it has to be 100% sourced in the United States, but 40 to 80% sourced in the United States.
And I mean, I guess I understand the goal here, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if we look at the microchip shortage, and that's been crazy, it turns out we don't build very many microchips in the U.S. Actually, we build more than people think. We don't import all of them, but we import a lot of them. And it hasn't mattered. The national source doesn't really matter to the supply problem. But if you look at it from a national security point of view, if the borders were to close because there was some sort of international crisis, you would want to have that manufacturing capacity at home, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what they want to do with these critical minerals for building EV batteries. You want to have that stuff home so that if something happens, there's an international skirmish, there's a war, or our borders close, you have that stuff in the United States. I get that. But I don't know that there's a good rollout plan here to make this work. But obviously, the goal is to encourage domestic production of these things, and that's a good thing. And additionally, there's money in this package, too, for the production of batteries in the United States, although we're seeing that Ford, Stellantis, and General Motors have already sought out and begun developing these partnerships to build to build batteries in the United States, right? General Motors has partnered with EG Chem to build batteries in Lordstown, Ohio, and in Spring Hill, Tennessee. So we're seeing this production take place in the U.S. I don't know if this needs to be encouraged to the degree that it is, but it certainly looks good politically. Jill, your thoughts.
And to me. It looks good politically. Yes. I agree with you. We definitely need to be bringing more of this stuff to America because it's more American jobs. It's more, you know, revenue that's staying in the United States. It's all good things. But, you know, I don't know that by 2024 we will be able to source 40% of that stuff in the United States. That's like a year and a half away. That's really close.
And one of the things we should never assume is that Congress knows what it's doing. you may remember the very early days of the hybrid vehicle when the Prius was becoming popular, and you couldn't get a Prius, right? They were selling super well. They were selling 250,000 Priuses a year. And people in Congress kept calling for federal money to buy federal vehicles only that were hybrid. Well, the problem was at the time the only hybrid was the Prius, and the Prius makes a lousy dump truck.
Yes, it does.
And I think to some degree here, there's just a lot of rah-rah, go, build America. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not entirely sure that it isn't being overplayed in this case. And obviously, a lot of it is political posturing. But we'll see what happens there. We're running out of time, but I wanted to run something past you. And I wanted to see if you remembered something. It's about the federal tax credits.
Okay, yep.
And it's interesting to me, like General Motors burned through the federal tax credits pretty much not selling electric vehicles, but selling plug-in electric vehicles. And you may remember they sold a lot of Volts with a V, which were plug-in hybrids, and they had a battery size large enough that they qualified for the full tax credit. But do you remember, and I do not blame you if you don't, do you remember what Ford sold a lot of, especially into fleets a few years ago?
Oh, was it the Fusion plug-in?
Yes, the Fusion and the C-Max Energy.
Yeah, ugh.
I had forgotten about those vehicles completely until I saw a C-Max in traffic the other day. The C-Max obviously was Ford's answer to the Prius, though it never sold nearly as well. And you may remember the C-Max scandal where it was advertised when it came out with a fuel economy rating of 45, 45, 45. So 45 city, 45 highway, 45 combined. And it never got close to those numbers.
No.
Never got close. I think the real numbers were more like 37.
Yeah. Well, and I think you just pointed out something really interesting in that, like, a lot of the earlier tax credits were eaten up by these plug-in hybrids. So my question is, does this new bill that they're introducing, does this also encompass plug-in hybrids, or is it only for strict battery electric vehicles?
Good question. I don't know the answer to that. I actually wondered about that. Mm-hmm. You know what I forgot to mention, just to get back to it? Energy was spelled E-N-G-E-R-I, which always irritates me.
Did the I have a little heart over the top of it?
Not on purpose.
Because that would be like, you know, Jenny with an I, and then you put a little heart over it. I don't know.
I could see happy owners doodling little hearts over the thing. But I don't know if the new laws will apply to plug-in hybrids. And as you know, and as I've mentioned, I'm not a big fan of plug-in hybrids.
Right.
Because I think it was our friend Sam Fiorani at Auto Forecast Solutions had seen research, or somebody had, maybe it was Robbie DeGraff at Auto Pacific, but someone had seen research suggesting that people do not plug in their plug-in hybrids.
Right. No, I remember that. And personally, I love plug-in hybrids. I think they are the best bridge to electric vehicles out there if you use them properly, because I think it gets people into the habit of plugging in at night.
Yeah.
And like living in the city like I do, my gym is 2 miles away. So I drive to the gym, I drive back from the gym. I drove 4 miles yesterday. So it's like, okay, I would never doing my city driving. And even if I come up to see you out in the suburbs, that's like 15 miles maybe. So you get a good plug-in hybrid with 30 to 40 miles of range, still don't need the battery. So, still don't need the gasoline. So I don't know. I mean, the only time I would need it is if I was making a road trip to my parents' house. And I think that battery electric vehicles, when used properly, are the perfect solution.
I guess. The thing about the plug-ins is, and you're right, like my commute is 17 miles each way. So if I plug in here at the office, I'm good for the round trip. So I've used no gas. But I hate that I'm hauling around a gasoline engine that I'm not using. And when you're on the road, and we see this for example, with the Jeep Wrangler 4xe, that gets worse fuel economy than it should when it's not being plugged in. Which is a problem. It's actually not good fuel economy. So you really got to plug it in to take advantage of any sort of energy savings. But by that said, they may work for some people. They don't seem to sell well in the U.S. They're very popular in Europe because there's a lot of tax credits for them. All right, you know what? We've burned through a lot of time. We should take a break, Jill. When we come back, we talk to Paul Harold of the Sons of Speed. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. I am Tom Appel, and this is indeed the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. Thanks for sticking around today. Hey, this is the part of the show when I strongly suggest, I badger you to follow me on Twitter. I am Car Guy Tom. That is car_guy_Tom on Twitter. Right now, the Aztec Challenge is taking place on Twitter. If you don't know what that is, check it out. All right, our guest today is part of the team over at the Sons of Speed. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast, Paul Harold. Paul, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on again.
Paul, tell us about the Sons of Speed.
Okay, so we are a group, two of us, that we love to do car reviews and YouTube videos of our car reviews. We used to have three, but unfortunately, one of our other members got another job because, like you know, this is not our professional job. This is more of our professional hobby. So he kind of got another job, and that job was taking up way too much of his time. So he kind of stepped away. But maybe, hopefully, in the future, we'll have him back. But it's the two of us, and we have a passion for cars, and so we kind of started this channel, and we do reviews and videos.
Well, tell us a little bit about that. So you guys have a website, and then your videos live on YouTube, correct?
Yeah, we mostly go on YouTube, and our website is kind of under an umbrella. We teamed up with some other car review companies as well. So our website is wearemotordriven.com, and under that you'll see Sons of Speed, Rides and Drives, and Auto Exotica. And from there, you kind of takes you into our YouTube page, which you can see our videos of car reviews.
I have watched your reviews. They are very good.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's good stuff. People should know about it. Paul, you wanted to talk a little bit about electric stuff, and you had mentioned specifically, and I love that you mentioned this by weird-ass internal technical jargon that I use, too, and that is EGMP.
Yes.
Tell us what EGMP is.
Electric Global Modular Platform. It's what Hyundai now calls their EV platforms. They basically came out with this new platform, and they have now three vehicles that use this same platform. You have the Kia EV6, the Hyundai Ioniq 5, and then the Genesis GV60. So essentially, same platform, but just different cars put on that platform. And they are actually coming out in the future with the absolutely gorgeous Ioniq 6, which will also use this new EGMP platform.
That's a lot of alphabets there. EGMP, EV6, EV5.
It's definitely an alphabet soup. But, you know, when you're talking EV and futuristic cars, it seems that they're all going into these acronyms, and just the more the merrier.
Well, Jill, now you've driven, is it the Genesis G80 electric, electrified?
Yes, I think they are calling it, I keep calling it the G80 EV, but they are officially calling it the electrified G80, which is full electric, which electrified to me usually says plug-in hybrid, yeah. But it is a full electric G80.
And that is also EGMP.
I believe you are correct on that, because it's their midsize.
Yeah, I believe it might be a modified version of it, because I think the 80 is a bigger vehicle, so it might be a modified version of that. But I was recently in the EV6 at the Mama Rally. It was a great car. It comes in different trim levels, and it's kind of all over the place, where you can have as little as 167 horsepower with like a single motor wheel drive version, up to the GT line that we drove, which has 320 horsepower, 446 pound-feet of torque, and then that one also has all-wheel drive. So it's kind of all over the place, and pricing reflects that, because you can get these as low as $43,000 and up to $58,000 fully loaded. And then in the future, it's not out in America yet, but I believe it's out in Europe right now, is the EV6 GT, the full-on GT, which has an immense 576 horsepower, and it's good for a 0-60 time in 3.5 seconds. So, and I believe it is coming to America, so we should have that soon.
We should talk a little bit about, and maybe not in this show, but I just want to mention it, the modularity of these EV platforms. We've got EGMP at Hyundai, and Hyundai, of course, parent company of Kia and Genesis, as we mentioned. And General Motors now has their Ultium platform, which is also modular, and it's going to be underneath things as ridiculous, exclusive, and expensive as the Cadillac Celestique, which we're now talking about costing $300,000 or $400,000, and as modest as the upcoming Equinox EV, which will start at $30,000. So it seems that this EV platform program that we're seeing in different manufacturers, much more much more modular and much more modifiable than anything we've seen for gasoline-powered vehicles. But let's talk a little bit about the eGMP platform, because it is relatively unique for one reason. It's one of the few EV architectures that allows 800-volt charging. Paul, do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, which is actually incredible, because if you use a 350 kilowatt fast charger, you can literally go from a 10% battery power to 80% in under 18 minutes, which actually this is a complete game changer now, because now you're getting very close to a time of a fuel fill up. So you're kind of in less than 18 minutes, you can now go, 80% of battery power, which is going to give you at least another 200 and some odd miles. So this is really a game changer, because no longer are you sitting around for 3 hours waiting for your battery to charge. And we're talking 18 minutes now, which is just huge.
Yeah, I love that. And that is really the answer to the solution, I think, of long charging times. But right now, who offers 350 volt DC fast charging? Pretty much just
Electrify America, isn't it?
Electrify America, yeah.
Yeah, they're not going to be readily available to, all over the place yet, but, that's obviously something to come out in the future.
And right now, the only other company to offer that super fast charging to use 800-volt architecture is the Volkswagen Audi group, right? It's available on the Porsche Taycan, the Audi, the Audi e-tron GT, and that's pretty much it, right?
Yeah, I don't believe the ID4 has it.
No, I believe what is it called? MEB architecture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of architecture, too, I just wanted to interject a quick correction. The G80 electrified is not built on the EMGP platform.
Oh, Jill, thanks for checking.
I wanted to Google that. I didn't want to get some emails next week, but it is not built on the EMG platform. So just heads up on that.
No, that's good, because I like to get emails, but not ones telling us that we're wrong.
You were wrong. Well, I was wrong. So, but no, it is not, because it uses a bigger battery with a higher capacity. So
Paul, go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say, one thing that's interesting about the Hyundai platform now is that there's much more of a distinction between Hyundai, Kia, and Genesis. Because in the previous cars, the gasoline cars, it was kind of a blur where you really didn't understand the role that Kia was trying to play versus Hyundai. I mean, Genesis is obviously always the luxury brand, but between Hyundai and Kia, there was kind of this blur. But now, with this new platform, we're definitely seeing a separation or a distinct character, where the Kia is definitely sliding towards a more sporty version, and the Hyundai is going to be more the mainstream, while Genesis is definitely staying in its role of luxury. But now there's definitely a difference in roles being played. Now you can see that much more obvious in the electric versions of the cars.
You raise a great point, because for years I've never really been able to make a differentiation between Hyundai and Kia. It always seemed like every different product they launched seemed to have a different role and a different mission, and they never seemed to line up with what you thought was sort of the core values of that particular brand. But talk about that. Talk about how the IONIQ 5 is different from the EV6.
Okay, first of all, they ride a little bit differently. The EV6 has got a little bit more tauter suspension than the IONIQ does, and the steering's a little bit more responsive. Not to say that the IONIQ doesn't have responsive steering. It's actually a very nice driving car as well. But there's just that little bit more of sportiness in the EV6 that you can feel, especially like when you jump from one to the other, like immediately. You can definitely feel that the EV6 has sort of a sportier aspects of it. Also, the cockpit is a little bit tighter around you than the IONIQ 5. Is a much more open cockpit, and even the IONIQ 5, the center arm console moves back and forth, so you can even get it out of your way if you don't want it there. The EV6 is more set, it doesn't move. So there's definitely more of a sportiness to the EV6 than the IONIQ 5, but I mean, essentially they're the same car. It's just that they're just kind of trying to have two different personalities. And I think they succeeded very well.
correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure I'm wrong, but maybe not. If you get into the Hyundai is basically keyless, but the Kia does have a push start. Is that correct?
As far as I know, yes. You know, it's one of those details I don't remember.
I remember this.
Jill, go ahead.
I was going to say, I know the Genesis GV60 is keyless, and that has a whole bunch of cool technology with, like, your fingerprint and your facial recognition and that kind of stuff. I don't remember the EV6 being – I only drove it at the Mama Rally, so I don't remember that being keyless.
I wanted to talk about that facial recognition for a second because I tried it. And just so you know, I tried it and set it up before having shaved, and then shaved. And it still worked. So there you have it.
But if you held up a picture of you, it would not work.
Really?
Yeah.
Correct. It actually has a 3D. It actually measures your face in 3D. So if you show up, a 2D photo will not work.
We should talk about this because I don't think most people know how the facial recognition system works, but it's pretty amazing. But when you set it up, you have to sit in the car, you have to set it up, and then you have to get out and look into the car's B pillar.
So if you see somebody staring aimlessly into the B pillar, they're not just like zoned out, they're actually doing something.
Yeah, so you have to stare into the B pillar, wait for the car to give you a confirmation that it has a picture of your face, and after which, unbelievably, when you don't need the key anymore, you can walk up to the car. And I tried this, I left the key behind someplace. It was amazing. It recognized my face. Strange new world.
And then you do, isn't it the fingerprint start?
Yes.
Yeah, so then do you also have to do, like, with your phone where you, like, put it in different places, like, over the little, I wouldn't call it a button, but the little circle on the console? Is that how it works, like your iPhone?
Yeah, and you had to do different samples of your finger.
Okay, yeah, exactly like the iPhone.
So a little bit like getting rolled by the cops, not that I would know.
Not that you would know.
Not that I would know.
To make sure you get the full fingerprint.
But I want to talk a little bit, too, about the Hyundai Kia, as long as we're talking about these vehicles, and specifically the EV6 and the IONIQ 5, and the cabins and the digital interfaces. One of the things that disappointed me most as we rolled into the new era of EV vehicles was the digital interface in the Volkswagen ID4, which I don't know why Volkswagen chose to reinvent the wheel when they introduced this vehicle, but the digital interface is incredibly confusing. And it's supposed to be simple and there's no buttons, it's entirely touchscreen, but yet it's perplexing. And there are some physical buttons there anyway that don't seem to do anything when you need them to. And I found both the Hyundai and the Kia products to be refreshingly simple. They worked, they're all touchscreen, but they're simple, they're elegant, they're big, clear touchscreens, and they work really well in direct light, which is not something that could be said about all of these systems. What do you guys think?
Oh, I agree. I think it was it's very intuitive, and they do the one thing that's important, they do it very correctly, and that is to differentiate radio controls versus the HVAC controls and then versus the entertainment, because those three things need to be separated, because you're going to be using one or the other. You're never going to be wanting to use one screen to do everything.
Yeah. I would agree with that. The only frustration I had, and if I'm recalling correctly, with the IONIQ 5 was the idea that, so I'm always cold. In case you didn't know that, I'm always cold. I always have my heated seats on. I always have my heated steering wheel on. If they're available, they are on. I know. I mean, it's just a thing. My husband, meanwhile, has like the air set at 69 and the, cooled seats on. But I found to get to the heated seat and the heated steering wheel was really cumbersome in the IONIQ 5. I'm trying to remember in my head, because the last time I drove it really was, I think, November of last year. That was one of my biggest frustrations, was just trying to get to those. But I want a hard button. I want a hard button for the heated seats and steering wheel.
Paul, we're running out of time here, but we have to make sure that we link to your reviews of these vehicles. So if you can send those to us, we will share them. What else are you guys working on?
I just finished an article on a person who lives in Western Springs, Illinois here, who just built a replica of the Bluesmobile. And it was just kind of a super fun project, basically one of the most iconic cars in one of the most iconic movies, especially if you're a Chicagoan. Kind of a obligatory to watch. You have to watch this Blues Brothers, otherwise you can't call yourself a Chicagoan. And he just finished a replica of it, and it's just, it's down to the bends in the radio antenna and the way you're dense in the trunk. I mean, it's unbelievable how he did this project, and he basically, you know, watched the movie frame by frame by frame to get every photo of the car and built this replica. Because even though they had 13 original Bluesmobiles for the movie, they destroyed each and every one of them. So there was never a car left after the movie. So, you know, unlike like the DeLorean and Back to the Future and stuff, where there's actually one or two surviving examples, in the Bluesmobiles there wasn't any. So there were people kind of came to order and started making some replicas of it. So it's a really cool project.
Does it have cop shocks, cop tires, and a 440?
Yes, it does. I asked the same question, and it does.
And it's a model made before catalytic converters, so it'll run good on regular gas.
You know, it runs on unleaded, and he even built a replica of the speaker that he can put on top of it.
Yeah, I love the speaker. That's such a subtle scene in the movie where you see Elwood moving towards the tower with the speaker on it. It's a really quick flash, and then it's on top of the car.
Yeah. So, and what's amazing is that the people from the Blues Brothers actually saw it being used, because it was actually used by Netflix Comedians in Cars and Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld. So they actually shipped it to California to use it for an episode with Seth Rogen.
Excellent.
And after that, it kind of became really famous, and Dan Aykroyd and Jim Belushi have actually signed the interior of it.
That's very cool. Very cool. All right. I look forward to reading that story, too. Paul, we're out of time. Remind us how we can check your stuff out.
Sure. It's sonsofspeed.com, or our umbrella page is wearemotordriven.com.
Sounds good. Paul, you have volunteered to stick around for the quiz this week. Is that correct?
I know I'm going to get killed, but yes, I did.
Thanks for sticking around, sucker.
All right. Okay.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, it's quiz time. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. Thanks for sticking around today. Hey, Jill.
Hey, yeah.
How can folks keep track of your social media activity? All of it.
All of it. I haven't used the word adorable yet this week, so I need to say prolific and adorable social media.
No.
That's never going away. But thanks again to Bob in Indiana. So at Jill Ciminiello, so my name, all one word, JILLCIMINILLO. And that is TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. You can follow me in all of those places. I also use the hashtag car du jour. So usually talking about the vehicles that I am driving today.
So basically, if people follow you, they don't really need Hulu or Netflix. You are all their entertainment needs.
Yeah, because I am adorable and entertaining.
There you go. Why? You are just so much entertainment in one package.
That would be true.
All right. Hey, Paul, how can folks follow the Sons of Speed on Twitter?
Sure. That would be @sons_of_speed. No, we are not as adorable as Jill. Sorry.
You're in your own right, you know?
All right. Who is? All right. Guess what time it is, boys and girls?
Oh, it's quiz time.
Is it quiz time?
It's quiz time.
And we both got that one right.
Yeah.
We both get 1 point.
1 point for each of you. Because we've been talking electrics today, I thought we would just go ahead and stick with that theme. Today's topic is Tesla. I hope you're ready.
Oh, okay.
Paul, you go first because you're our guest. Paul, what is the base price of the Tesla Model 3 long-range dual motor? That is Tesla's compact sedan with all-wheel drive and the biggest battery. Is it $50,940 or $60,940?
I'm going to go with the $50,940.
Going with $50,000? Jill, this question goes to you.
$50,940?
I'm sorry, you said 60?
No, 50, 50.
Okay, 50 for Paul. Jill, 50 or 60?
Yeah, that's a tough one because I feel like Tesla did a bit of a bait and switch with their Model 3 where everybody's like, oh, it's the affordable $30,000 EV. And then they
It was never that.
It was never, ever that. But did it hit 60,000 is the question, because that would double the price. I'm sure there are some versions of it you could get for 60.
Well, this is the long range dual motor.
Long range. I'm gonna agree with Paul and I'm going to say 50.
You kids are both wrong. It's actually, at the moment, because Tesla changes their prices fairly regularly.
Daily.
Yeah. But last time I checked, which was this week, $60,940. That's $59,400 plus $1,200 destination plus a non-refundable $250 ordering fee. Brings you to $69.40. Wow. No one is on the board. This question goes to Jill. Jill, how many cars has Tesla sold in the first half of 2022 in the U.S.? Is it about 150,000 cars, about 230,000 cars, about 300,000 cars, or 80 cars?
80. 80 is the number. You said 150, 200, 300?
150, 230, 300.
230 is a peculiar number. I'm going to go with that because I have no idea.
Yeah. All right. Paul, this question goes to you. 150, 230, or 300,000 units for Tesla in the first half of the U.S.?
Is it sold or delivered?
That's a good question. I believe that is sold per Automotive News.
Okay. I'm sorry. One more time. What were the amounts again?
150, 230, or 300,000?
I'm going to go with a happy medium here and say 230.
You guys are both correct. It's 228,700, a nice solid number for Tesla. You're both on the board.
Which, harkening back to the EV credit thing, that they are clearly out of the game in terms of EV credits if they sold 230,000 in the first half of 2022.
All right. Yeah, they would have been out of the game this year alone.
Yeah.
All right, this question goes to Paul. Paul, what is the best-selling Tesla model in the U.S.? Is it the 3, the S, the X, or the Y?
Either the 3 or the Y. But I'm going to go with the Y just because of the SUVs just going off the charts here. So I'll say the Model Y.
All right, Jill, this question goes to you. The 3, which is their small sedan, the S, which is their big sedan, the X, which is their odd big crossover, or the Y, which is their compact crossover?
Okay, Paul has Jill logic. This is no good because we're going to end up in a tie. because I would say the 3 or the Y as well, because they're the least expensive models, although the S is the longest running model. But I tend to agree that the SUV would be the focus, and so I would say why.
All right, you're both correct. It is 2-2. And it's not even close. The Y, about 108,000 models, examples. The 3, about 90,000. The S, about 20,000. And the X, just 10,000.
Oof.
The X, of course, equipped with the bizarre Falcon doors.
the weird X-Wing.
The unnecessary.
How can we make something as complicated as possible? I know what we can do. The Falcon doors.
Yeah, people want to complain about using a button instead of a door handle to open a door from the inside. Let's go back to these X-Wing doors for a minute.
Were especially odd and amusing at the time because Tesla, of course, was choking on debt at the time and big cash flow issues, and they couldn't deliver this vehicle because they were trying to make the doors work. Mm-hmm. And stockholders were just so mad. It's like, why did you even bother with this? And for people who don't know, it's just the rear doors. It has normal doors up front and weird lifting DeLorean-style Falcon doors in the back. Very weird.
Makes for some great YouTube crashing in the garage videos.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, people forgetting their doors up and they drive into the garage.
Ooh.
And hilarity ensued. All right, Paul, this question, or no, Jill, this question goes to you. Jill, how much does the Model S Plaid cost with no options? This, of course, the fastest Tesla product with 1,020 horsepower and a claimed 0 to 60 time of 1.99 seconds. So the high-performance Plaid version of the Model S, base price, is it about 120 grand, 140 grand, or 160 grand?
Ugh, this is how much I don't pay attention to Tesla. I was going to say 90,000. You didn't even give that as an option.
Or $90,000.
Yeah, no. So I'll go, you said 120, 140, 160?
Yes.
I'll say 120.
All right. Paul, this question goes to you. 120, 140, 160.
Okay, so my neighbor two houses down actually bought one.
Unfair
so
advantage.
I kind of have the advantage here, but what the thing that you're throwing a curveball is when you say there's no option, because now I'm a little, I don't know for 100% sure, but I'm going to go with the 140.
Paul, you're correct. It starts about 141, 940 right now. Paul now has the lead. It's 3-2. This is anyone's
crazy
game.
Well done. So what my question is, how much did he spend on it then? Because he clearly put options on it.
I think he was over 160 all said and done.
Wow.
Because the autopilot package is like 10 grand right there.
Good golly.
Wow. All right, this is the last of the regular questions. Paul, it goes to you first. Paul, which of the following is not a Tesla production facility? This is a vehicle production facility. Fremont, California, Shanghai, China, Berlin, Germany, Valencia, Spain, or Austin, Texas. One of those is a fake.
Oh, God.
Two of them were just opened.
Oh, gosh. It's either, for me, it's going to be either Spain or Texas.
Need an answer, sir.
I know.
Usually it's Jill's role to
hem and haw, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me see here. I'm going to go with Spain.
Valencia, Spain. All right. Jill, this question goes to you. One of these is fake. Fremont, California, Shanghai, China, Berlin, Germany. I forgot where Berlin was. Valencia, Spain, and Austin, Texas. One of those is not a vehicle production facility. Two of those opened just this year.
And I could be, I'm probably 100% wrong on this, but I feel like I read something once upon a time about them, Tesla, having problems opening anything in Germany because of some kind of a small business rule.
Yes, they did have a lot of problem.
So I'm going to say Germany.
You're saying that's not the real one?
Yeah, that's not the real one.
Well, Jill, they got the Berlin plant open.
Ugh. Okay.
Valencia, Spain is it. Paul, you
well
are.
Well done.
Yeah, the other one, Austin, Texas, just opened this year. So last year, globally, Tesla built almost 1 million vehicles out of just two factories, and that's Fremont, California, and Shanghai, China. All right, Paul.
I know about the China one because that was a big news item for years. So, but yeah. I wasn't sure about the Spain one. So,
all right, Paul wins 3-2. We go to the bonus question because that's what we do, in keeping with our theme of discussing summer.
And actually, I think he won 4-2.
Oh, 4-2.
Yeah.
4-2.
Because he got the price of the Plaid and the last one.
Oh, yeah.
Well
done. I should probably keep better notes.
Well, you know, unless it's me winning. Then you don't have to keep better notes.
All right. Jill, according to GardenKnowHow.com, which of the following is a fake variety of watermelon? Are you ready?
No, but go ahead.
All right. And this is the bonus question, which we do whether or not we need to. Jill, Morgan Gold, Black Diamond, Jubilee, or Crimson Sweet? One of those is fake.
Okay, would you really want to eat a watermelon that's black?
Yeah, it's a weird name.
So I'm going to go with that. Black Diamond.
All right. Paul, this question goes to you. Morgan Gold, Black Diamond, Jubilee, or Crimson Sweet? One of those is not a variety of watermelon, according to GardenKnowHow.com.
Well, since I'm winning anyway, let me go off. Let me do something different than what Jill picked. What was the first one?
Morgan Gold.
That's what I'm going to go with.
And you're correct, Paul. I made that one up.
Well done.
All right. So Paul wins 4-2. The guest takes the prize. One bonus point question for them. Jill, you probably want to go ahead, get around to asking me what's going on at the CG Daily Drive blog.
So Tom, what's going on over at the CG Daily Drive blog?
I'm glad you asked me. We've got a couple of things going on here I want to talk about with what time we have. We have a test drive gallery this week, just went up, of the 2022 Nissan Kicks SV. This is one of my favorite small crossovers. I wish it was available with all-wheel drive, but there's a lot going on with this vehicle, including a fun color. You guys are familiar with the Monarch
yes.
Orange?
Yeah.
Kind of a signature color for Nissan. That's what our test car is here. But a lot to like. We got about 31 miles per gallon. The vehicle tested out to about $24,000. We've got lots of pictures here. But if you're looking for something that is roomier than it looks, kind of fun to drive, easy on the gas, and surprisingly affordable, this is a good way to go. So you'll want to check out this review.
Yeah, I really like the Kicks.
Yeah.
I just want to say how much I really enjoy that vehicle, because for, I want to say, under $25,000, you can get
right.
the like leatherette seating surfaces, heated seats, obviously my favorite feature. I think there's even like a heated steering wheel on there. There's good stereo, the Bose and the headrests. And I mean, this is just a really well done, nice vehicle from Nissan.
Yeah, it's also a 2022 Consumer Guide Best Buy. Also this week, we posted our review of, and I hope you guys have at least seen this vehicle, maybe you've driven it. Interesting vehicle. It's the 2022 Mercedes-Benz E450 All-Terrain.
Oh, I haven't seen it, but I love it.
Yeah, it is. We should talk about what this is. It's basically a station wagon that has been lifted and given the off-road sort of SUV treatment. It's mm-hmm. pretty light. So if you think about Subaru Outback, you kind of get the idea. But this is a little bit bigger. This is a mid-size station wagon with some fun features, including a beautiful interior, a fantastic stereo. Now, when you load it up with that stuff, it gets expensive. Our test car was $80,000. But I also want to talk about something here that reminded me of my youth, and that is the third row seats is a pair of back-facing seats.
I love that.
It's so cool.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, you don't see that much anymore, and they're awesome. And if you're a couple of little kids, I think you enjoy the view. My dad had a Ford Country Squire, I think it was 1969 or so, and he had it for all of like 3 months because the gas mileage was so bad. For a little while, my sister and I really enjoyed that. And then finally, because we steal content from Collectible Automobile Magazine, our sister publication, we have a really fun photo feature here of the 1969 AMC Javelin SST. A lot of people don't remember the Javelin, but it was direct competition for the Camaro, the Firebird, and the Mustang. A little bit bigger. Good-looking car, arguably. This one's interesting and a little controversial. It has a black vinyl top. Mm. People might dig it. It also has the most potent engine, which is a 390 cubic inch V8. But all that stuff is at the Daily Drive blog this week. Jill, guess what we did?
We had a really good day, I think. We had a good time, but we probably also talked too much.
Yeah, A's all around. A's all around. You guys get A's. I get a B+ because I stumbled a little over some of the pre-written text. But yeah, good show.
I get an A- for the EGMP thing, but you know.
All right. Thanks to our guest today, Paul Harold of the Sons and Speed. Make sure to check them out. Thanks to producer Lady B and the good folks here at WCPT AM 820 in Chicago. As always, a shout out to my radio mentors, Steve and Johnny. You guys are the best. Remember to follow the Car Stuff Podcast and Consumer Guide Automotive on Facebook. All right, if you have questions or comments, check us out at carstuff@consumerguide.com. All right, let's talk more about cars again next week.